Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks.
And I'm Doug Trabu. Tinnitus, it's a ringing, whistling, hissing, or whooshing in the ears, and it's surprisingly common.
An estimated 50 million Americans suffer from tinnitus, including many veterans. It's the most common injury from military service, and dozens of the people hurt in the Boston Marathon bombings have it as well.
There's no cure, but recently researchers have begun to uncover some new clues about how tinnitus works. Here to tell us more is Carrie Goldberg, co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Hi, Carrie.
Hey, Doug.
Let's start off by saying that it is pronounced tinnitus, although many of us have come to believe it's tinnitus.
Right. Actually, both pronunciations are in use. Our Common Health post was by the very distinguished medical reporter Richard Knox, and he assures me that the medical experts tend to say tinnitus. So I think we're going to go with that.
50 million people, as we mentioned, have tinnitus. It's amazing how prevalent it is. Tell us what it is exactly and what the medical cause is.
Okay, so first of all, as you mentioned, it is incredibly common. 50 million Americans, 20 million say that it's actually burdensome for them, and 2 million have really severe disabling tinnitus, often accompanied by depression. So what is it? The conventional theory is that it's kind of the brain's response to damage to the tiny hair cells in the inner ear. It most often stems from some kind of hearing damage, and the older you are, the likelier you are to get it. And as Richard Knox writes, it tends to be a little bit like a phantom limb. It's like your auditory brain centers are trying to fill in the gaps that have been caused by this hair cell damage by creating phantom sounds. So it's a bit like the phantom pain that some amputees have in their limbs that they've lost.
And we're starting to see some new research about tinnitus. Tell us what's coming out.
Well, so just recently, there was a new report in the journal Current Biology that challenged the conventional thinking about tinnitus. The thinking had been that it's very concentrated in the part of the brain that perceives sound. But what this latest paper found was that it kind of looks like it's more all over the brain. It's in the hearing parts, but it's also in parts of the brain related to emotion, memory, and attention. So that was actually not such great news, because if it's more complicated, it may be harder to treat.
And joining us now in the studio is Dr. Dan Pauly. He's a neuroscientist at the Mass Eye and Ear Infirmary who's doing research with people who have tinnitus as a result of the Boston Marathon bombings 2 years ago. Dan, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thanks for having me.
So tell us more about your research on the bombing survivors. What are you working on with them?
Well, we're trying to bring them some relief for their tinnitus symptoms. Our approach is to take a non-invasive angle at remedying these symptoms.
So I'm really interested in the music therapy that you're doing with people. They get to choose music, and then you filter out the tone that is similar to their tinnitus. Do I have that right?
Yeah, just about. We've developed two different types of therapies for every subject that chooses to enroll. The first, as you mentioned, is a music therapy. And we did not invent this approach. It's actually been published several years ago, so it's undergone the rigors of peer review. And they listen to the music of their choosing that has a filter put in place that is set according to the very particular nature of their tinnitus. So no two forms of music therapy are identical. Every individual has their own unique filter.
I know you're in sort of the preliminary stages of this work, but would the idea be that you could retrain the brain to have that benefit of the music last when the music isn't playing?
That's the goal exactly. The other approach we've developed, this immersive audio motor game, actually comes from something that's been identified by the entertainment software industry. We scientists have to take our cues from many diverse places. The makers of action video games have really hit upon that formula, and their games really capture the essence of those three components. And people play them for hours a day. They are rewarded. They are punished. These are difficult stimuli to decode. And you get lots and lots of practice. And not surprisingly, people who play these kind of video games have radically changed perception, the ability to divide their attention across multiple sources. So we wanted to capture the essence of what entertainment software has done for the purposes of entertainment and kind of leverage it against this debilitating sensory disorder.
So one of the things that really intrigues me is that there are so many moving parts to what can be involved here. You've got maybe physical damage to the ear at some level, and then you have the brain trying to compensate for that physical damage. And then maybe you have psychological effects. People can suffer depression if they have it for a long time. Does that make it even more challenging for you to try and zone in on how to get past this?
Well, we take a simplistic and optimistic approach. The damage to the ear is not required, but it's almost always there. And at present, it is not something that can be fixed or repaired. As for the sort of cascade of psychological effects that come from this tinnitus, you hear a phantom sound, a sound that doesn't come from the environment. It's disturbing. It's annoying. For some people, it's more than that. It disturbs their sleep. It causes great anxiety. The problem's even worse for the people we're working with, the survivors of the marathon bombing, I think because their tinnitus most likely began on that April afternoon in 2013. So it carries an extra psychological toll. Mm. All these secondary affective problems that arise from tinnitus are very real. But again, we are optimistic that if we focus on that intermediate layer, that is the pathology in the auditory brain areas that generate the phantom sound, and if we can dial down the intensity of that, we hope that these second layers, the affective layers, how bothersome it is to you, how disruptive, et cetera, will kind of fall into place.
And Dan, I just wanted to ask, I know you're a neuroscientist and not an MD, but when we posted Richard Knox's story about tinnitus on Common Health this weekend, it got huge response, like 30,000 Facebook shares. And one of the most common responses was from people saying, I got tinnitus from a drug, including some antibiotics. Now, this is a known side effect, possible side effect of some drugs, but how could that even work?
Right. Well, and again, I'll say with the caveat that I am not an otolaryngologist, but with that said, what seems most likely to me is that some of these drugs have ototoxic effects, which means that they can damage temporarily or permanently the sound transduction apparatus of the ear. There are problems with the ear. These hair cells are very sensitive to some of these drugs.
There's no cure for tinnitus. Do you have any sense of where we are on the timeline toward getting to one?
It's a tough problem because it falls at the intersection of a number of different medical disciplines. It's part psychiatry, part neurology, part audiology, part otolaryngology. That could mean that the cure moved four times faster, but in effect, I think it's moved at one quarter of the speed. We really need to take ownership. And as medicine matures, we're finding these hybrid fields like mine, applied neuroplasticity, that might be able to leverage all that we've learned and try to tackle a real clinical problem.
Dr. Dan Pauly is a neuroscientist at the Massachusetts Eye and Ear Infirmary who specializes in neuroplasticity. Thanks so much for speaking with us.
It was a pleasure. Thank you very much.
And Carrie Goldberg is co-host of WBUR's Common Health blog. Thanks as always, Carrie.
You're welcome, Doug.
For a link to Richard Knox's reporting on tinnitus, you can go to our website, radioboston.org.
And that's it for today. And before we go, I want to say two things. First, Doug, it's great to have you with us for a few days.
Thanks, Anthony. I'm really enjoying it.
Yeah, another thing I want to say is that today is a birthday of sorts. We're celebrating 5 years since Radio Boston became a daily show. So listeners, thank you for listening. Thanks for making us as good as we can be. And here's to the next 5 years.
At my day job, Anthony, only a game. We've only been on for 21.
Ha!
So I hope you catch up to us.
We'll do our best.
Radio Boston is a production of WBUR, Boston's NPR news station. I'm Doug Tribou.
And I'm Anthony Brooks. Join us again tomorrow for more Radio Boston.